You know, psychologists talk about it takes a village to raise a child. I don't know whether you ever heard that or not. I know that some of the pop psychologists have used it, but it is a valid concept. A village is defined as what you belong to, that which shapes what you do, shapes how you live. It takes a village to raise a child. I'm thankful for the village my kids had. My kids grew up in a group of people that loved each other, a group of people who cared about each other. This song, How Sweet, How Heavenly, when those that love the Lord and one another's peace delight and so fulfill the word, and each can feel his brother's sigh and with him bear a part, when sorrow flows from eye to eye and joy from heart to heart. Who do you go to in those circumstances? My kids had a neighborhood where the neighbors really cared about each other. You know, today, a lot of times in a neighborhood, you don't even know who the neighbor is, much less know what their circumstance is, what they're struggling with. My kids had a church village. They had adults that we had confidence in, Christian men and women who set an example before them that they could emulate. Grandpa Hoggett at the church that we attended at the time, you've heard me mention him from time to time, older man, didn't have a close relationship with my kids, but every time he saw them, he smiled at them. Every time there was something they wanted to get some help with, even if it was just raising money for something at school, he'd buy the candy. He didn't eat candy. He'd buy the brush. He was bald like me. But the kids knew they cared about him, and they grew up with that kind of village. That doesn't mean the kids always followed the village. We had close friends that were part of the village my kids had. I had one daughter in particular who thought other villages looked a little better. Other villages had more fun. Other villages offered pleasure. And she wanted out of our village. That was a struggle. That was a battle. I thought we handled that pretty well. But then she went away to college. I had to decide what kind of a college was I going to send her to. I decided I wanted to preserve the village as much as possible, so I sent my kids to a Christian college. You can find anything you want at a Christian college. You can find drugs, you can find alcohol, you can find sex, you can find pornography, or you can find Christian values, mission work, high moral standards, people who care. You know what actually jolted my daughter, I think, out of realizing she was in the wrong village? She was working in a fast food place to get money to maintain the lifestyle in the village she wanted to be in. And a guy came in and tried to rape her. He beat her up. He stabbed her with a broken whiskey bottle. He grabbed her by the throat. I never will forget the next weekend when I went to see her. There were four bruises. 1, 2, 3, 4, and a thumbprint. Right there. You think that doesn't do something to a father? But that experience God used for some positive things. She began to realize maybe the village she was part of wasn't what she thought it was. And there was an incredible change in her life. And the village she's a part of now is a wonderful village. She has two wonderful daughters who I think recognize from their mother's experience what their village needs to be. I want to ask you a question today. What is your village? What do you belong to? And that's a question you answer to yourself. You don't answer it to me. It's none of my business. But you answer it to yourself. What kind of a village do you have for your friends, for your family? What shapes you and guides you in what you do and how you live? Let me suggest a couple of things about villages this morning that God provides for us in His Word. One of the things God says we need to be sure of is that our village provides a knowledge of God. We're all familiar with 2 Timothy 2, beginning with verse 15. Study to show yourself to be approved to God, a workman that does not to be ashamed, correctly dividing the word of truth. But shun profane and vain babblings, for they will multiply godlessness. Why do we have Bible study? You know, we meet here on Sunday morning, we have Bible study. We meet here Sunday night, we have Bible study. I love what Richard's been doing with us on Sunday night. Wonderful, wonderful class. We get together on Wednesday, we have Bible study. Why do we do that? You say, well, sometimes it's boring. Well, that's up to us. You get out what you put in. But we have to think about what village do we have in terms of our knowledge, what we put emphasis on. What dominates our homes on television? What dominates us on reading materials? Julie called me yesterday. We've got a magazine, a good magazine, Christian Woman. And we've subscribed to it with the hope of circulating it and having women look at the articles written by good Christian women. Question is this worth renewing? Are we interested in that part of our village? We have the Power for Today that I think we've got all of them in circulation right now. You know, I think it's interesting how what you have around your house speaks of your village. My brother whined and complained about what was in my bathroom. And I thought he was talking about soap and hair washing stuff and, you know, all that. And he's complaining about what's in the magazine rack. So when I was at his house, I looked at what is in his magazine rack. Playboy. Penthouse. And where has that led him? What is his village? What has that done for him? And you know the struggle we've had. The alcohol, the difficulties. It is only when he realized the futility of the village he was in that he began to make some change. What reading material do you have? What promotes your village? And what do your kids read? What do they text? Where do they get their information? We need to be sure we work on that. I'm glad we've got access to the web here in this building. I hope we will improve what we do in our classes by using those resources. And I hope we will continue to provide opportunities for you to pick up literature. We have all kinds of literature out there. I hope you pick it up. Take it home. Just put it there. You'd be surprised. You might read it. Let me also suggest to you that your village must live biblical principles. And that's such a challenge. I want to emphasize something. Your village must live biblical principles. Listen to what Jesus said about the village of his day. This is Matthew 23, beginning with verse 2. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat, so you must obey them and do everything they tell you. But do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. Everything they do is done for men to see. What do you see in your village? What are the people that you are around, the people that come to your house, your friends, what do they do? Later in verses 23 through 28, Jesus speaks to these religious leaders. I want you to listen to what he says. Woe to you teachers of the law, you Pharisees, you hypocrites. You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin. Now let me stop there for just a minute. You give a tenth of your spices. What are spices? They're things that smell. Mint, Well, you know what mint smells like? You walk in somebody's house that's got mint tea, you know it, don't you? Dill and cumin, those aren't spices we use as much. They make up a basis of the most odorous materials that can be found to keep a house fresh. We use those electronic things to spray the room fresheners. It's that type of thing. So that's what they were giving a tenth of. Why? Because everybody knew when they did it. They brought in the spices. Man, they walked in the building, you could smell it. You knew what they were doing. But listen to what Jesus says in the rest of this. But you have neglected the more matters, important matters of the law. Justice, mercy, and faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. Notice the emphasis is on living. The village must live biblical principles. And it's important to understand as we look at the way in which our village functions, that we understand how we should conduct ourselves and what our kids should see, what our mates should see. Those of you that have a husband or a wife who is not a believer, it's so important that they see people living the system. Philippians 2, beginning with verse 12. You have always obeyed what you were taught. Yeah, we do a good job here. Just as you obeyed when I was with you, it is even more important for you to obey when I am not with you. The most important sermons your mate, your child, hears are the ones that they hear outside of this building. There's a certain expectation about what I'm going to say. There's a certain expectation about what we're going to hear in Bible class. But Paul says, when I'm not with you, that's what's really critical. You must continue to live in a way that brings meaning to your salvation. Did you hear that? What good does it do to have a claim to salvation if it isn't demonstrated in the way we live? Do this with fear and respect for God. Yes, it is God who is working in you. He helps you to want to do what pleases Him, and He gives you the power to do it. You want to live a better life? God will give you that power. Do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you will be blameless and pure children of God without any fault. But you are living with evil people all around you. You have lost their sense of what is right. Among you, these people, you will shine like lights in a dark world, and you offer them a teaching that gives life. You realize how much of the Gospels is devoted to encouraging us to live a life that has a worldview that is positive? Listen to 1 Thessalonians 5, beginning with verse 12. Now we ask you, brothers, to respect those who work hard among you, who are over you in the Lord and who admonish you. Hold them in highest regard and love because of their work. Live in peace with each other. And we urge you, brothers, warn those who are idle. Encourage the timid. Help the weak. Be patient with everyone. Make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always be kind to each other and to everyone else. Be joyful always. Pray continually. Give thanks in all circumstances. For this is God's will concerning you in Christ Jesus. Do not put out the Spirit's fire. Don't let apathy become a part of your life. Don't put out the Spirit's fire. Do not treat prophecies with contempt. Test everything. Hold to the good and avoid every kind of evil. The Bible is full. The New Testament, the Gospels, the letters are full of admonitions to us to live. Live in a way that the village, the thing that people see, the way we affect people, is primarily concerned with what we do and how we live. I'm so proud of this congregation in that regard. You take our core group here, the people that are out cleaning the highway, the people that are present when there's something wrong with the building, the people that are involved in preparing our potlucks, the people that are working the fair booth. You look at the core group here and you see people that are living God's system, who contribute to the village. I have been so encouraged in the 15 years that I've been a part of this congregation to know the people here who live the system. I attended a congregation before. There was a lot of lip service and there was a lot of fancy stuff done. Very entertaining, very wonderfully presented. But the people weren't living the system. They weren't treating each other in a way that lives as God had called them to live. And the result of that was that there was no growth. There was no peace. There was no harmony. It didn't positively affect the people around them. Your village has to have a worldview that is biblical. You know, the psalmist said it so well. Listen to Psalms 1, very first psalm, first two verses. What a great blessing there are for those who don't listen to evil advice, who don't live like sinners, and don't join those who make fun of God. Who make fun of God. Instead, they love the Lord's teachings about them day and night. Do the people around you make fun of God? This morning in class, it was brought up that there's a big debate that went on this last week. Bill Nye, the science guy, had a debate with Ken Ham, the guy that runs the Creation Museum in Kentucky. And what's interesting to me is you look at all the responses that people make to the announcement about the debate. I counted 175 responses. All but about 12 of them were ridiculing God, ridiculing the Bible, ridiculing those who would be stupid enough to believe in God. That's the culture in which we live. And the psalmist said, don't be like that. Don't be associated with people. Don't let people be a part of your village that ridicule your faith in God. Another part of that worldview that is biblical is to be content. Philippians 4, verse 11, Paul said, I have learned to be satisfied with what I have and with whatever happens. I know how to live when I am poor and I have plenty and when I have plenty. I have learned the secret of how to live through any kind of situation. When I have enough to eat or when I am hungry. When I have everything I need or I have nothing. Christ is the one who gives me strength. I need to do whatever I must do. Does that describe you? Is your village one of contentment? I was a school teacher. Never had much money. One of the things my daughter didn't like about the village she was in was that she was a child of a lousy, underpaid, poor school teacher. Some of her friends drove fancy cars. Some of her friends had $100, $150, $200 a week allowance. Some of her friends wore fancy jewelry, fancier clothes. It upset her that that was not a part of her village. You know what changed her thinking there? You know, there aren't a lot of times when I've done something that was right, but in raising kids, I think I've made more mistakes than anybody else has. But one of the things I think that happened here that was right was in the middle of all the struggles I had with my daughter, she had had some problems. She wanted to get away from South Bend. She especially wanted to get away from us. And I made called a friend of mine who runs a mission program in the Caribbean. And he was his name was Carl Allison. We lost Carl just 2 weeks ago. But Carl was taking young people down to conduct a VBS in Aruba. And my daughter had seen the beautiful fancy hotels in Aruba. You know, she had the picture of the pleasure boats and the yachts and the, oh boy, this is going to be great. I said, you want to go to Aruba? Yeah, I want to go to Aruba. Well, you're going to work while you're in Aruba. That's okay. I just want to go to Aruba. And you're going to be living in a village away from the coast. You're not going to be in that big fancy hotel. That's all right. I want to go to Aruba. And she went to Aruba. And she lived in a dirt-floored hut. And she worked with people who didn't have any money at all and were struggling to have enough to eat. And you know what? When she came home, she had a different worldview. Because she saw other people have to live. I don't know how you can relate to Godwick and what he has shared with us. You imagine getting a phone call that says, guess what? Guess what? The bad news is that everything you own was stolen. All your family has left is what they were wearing and the beds they were laying in. It's all gone. And the good news is, they're still alive. The good news is, your family is still alive. You know, it's amazing to me how God we can keep smiling through all this. And it's amazing to me that His village, His family is structured in such a way that even though they've been ripped out of their homeland and they're in Ethiopia, which is not exactly paradise, and in circumstances that are far worse than most of us can imagine, that they continue to be able to be content with what they have. I hope Godwick will continue to be a part of our family here because He has a lot to teach us. He has a lot to show us. He may not say anything, but He has a lot to show us about what it means to be content. How about your village? 1 Timothy 6, beginning with verse 6, devotion to God is, in fact, a way for people to be very rich, but only if it makes them satisfied with what they have. Do you hear that? Timothy says, but only if it makes them satisfied with what they have. We've got to learn to be satisfied. He goes on, he says, when we came into this world, we brought nothing. You didn't have anything on. You didn't have any jewelry when you came into this world. When we die, we take nothing out. Yeah, we all know that, don't we? So if we have food and clothes, we should be satisfied with that. People who want to be rich bring temptation to themselves. See, when money becomes really important to you, your village begins to disintegrate. They are caught in a trap. They begin to want many foolish things that will hurt them. These things ruin and destroy people. The love of money causes all kinds of evil. What causes divorce? In our country, what causes divorce? You know what the psychologists say? And this is why I mentioned Steve Diggs early in our worship today. Says that money is the number one cause of divorce. It's not sexual issues. It's not educational issues. It's not anything that has to do with the way we feel about each other. It's money. Because that has become so ingrained in the village that we live in, the society in which we live. Even in the church, we have problems, but we don't normally have divisions about money. We usually have divisions about kids. And I know about that. If my wife Phyllis and I had 50 arguments, 49 of them were about kids. What to do, how to raise them, how to respond to situations. In the church, we have things, Titus talks about it in Titus 3, beginning with verse 9, stay away from those who have foolish arguments, who talk about useless family histories, or who make trouble and fight about what the law of Moses teaches. In the church, our village cannot be full of people that just want to fight and argue, even about religious topics. He goes on in Titus and says, these things are useless and won't help anyone, but give a warning to all who cause these arguments. In the back of my bulletin that you have, I have an article about Christians being peacemakers. And one of the things that's kind of interesting about that article is I talk about Linda and Janet, who are Cindy's sisters, and how they literally look for ways to argue about things. So if one says black, the other will say white. And family reunions are inevitably battles because the village has put a premium on money and on politics, and I discussed that in the bulletin. And when you get right down to it, they don't have any kind of a focus on anything that brings love. Your village must bring all this together in lifestyle. And the Bible is about lifestyle. In Proverbs 31, we read about the lifestyle of a woman who is called a virtuous woman. In 1 Timothy 3, beginning with verse 2, we read about the lifestyle of the ideal Christian leader, an elder or a deacon. Titus talks about the lifestyle of people. And we have examples before us. The whole Bible is full of examples of things that have to do with how we conduct ourselves. When Jesus washed the apostles' feet in John 13, beginning with verse 15, you remember what he said? He said, I have done this as an example for you, So you should serve one another as I have served you. You will be happy if you do them. Want to find joy? Find ways to serve. I suggest to you in the bulletin today, we have so many people that are struggling physically right now. Just an astronomical number of percentage-wise of this congregation are battling health issues. Take 15 minutes every day and do something for someone that's on that list. Julie and Carl have given you the tools. I mean, this is a wonderful thing for you to have, to be able to use 15 minutes out of 24 hours and serve your village. Jesus says, you'll be happy if you do this. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11:1, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. And I bring that up because most of you know I try to send you a letter, at least one or two a year. But I also try to make sure that anybody that's sick hears from me at least once, twice a month. I try to take 15 minutes. So I don't say this to you as something I want you to do, and I'm not doing it. I'm saying to you, I found joy in that. It's wonderful to call people and say, hey, how you doing? What's happening? And be able to pray about them and know that God is listening to you. Look at the lifestyle of successful Christians in our day. Who's there when you're sick? Who do you call when you got a problem? What's going on when you need groceries? If you need clothing, who do you know will bring it to you? If you need a ride, who's going to take care of you? And we can do this as a body. That's why we have the pantry. That's why we have the phone numbers. And Carl's going to eventually update our phone system so that you can do that in a more accelerated way. But I think it's important for us to understand we can do this individually. Most of us have a phone at home. Most of us have the access. And if you need cards, I've got a tub of cards. You want some cards? Tell me what you want. I'll get them for you. All you have to do is to fill it out, sign it, and mail it. We can do this individually. We can do it as a body. Let me ask you one last question this morning. Are you part of the village? Or are you standing outside looking into the village? In Acts 2, we have a picture of the first century church. The believers spent their time, this is verse 42. The believers spent their time listening to the teaching of the apostles. They shared everything with each other. They ate together and they prayed together. Brothers and sisters, we try to do all those things. Everyone felt great respect for God. I hope that's true. The believers shared a common purpose. We have a purpose to serve. We have a purpose in meeting together. And every day they spent part of their time together in the temple area. They also ate together in their homes. They were happy to share their food and they ate with joyful hearts. The believers praised God, and listen to this, and were respected by all the people. See, people outside looking in see this body here and understand this village. Last couple of times, because of the snow piles, I haven't had this happen. But when I've been out there working on that sign, inevitably somebody stops. I think I've talked to every neighbor up and down this street as they drive by, and they always have something positive to say. The guy back here, I think he is the guy that moved, but the guy back here came up one day. He had a whole box of letters that had blown off of our thing and were over there against his pool fence. And we had a chance to talk. It's the first time I met the guy. He's on the outside looking in. He had a lot of positive things to say about the church. And brothers and sisters, that's what we're about. That's what we want to do. That's what we want to be a part of. And, you know, we may not be seeing all the things we'd like to see happen, but God is working. And I come back to the question, are you on the outside looking in? Or are you part of the village? Being part of the village simply means being a Christian. That song that we sang before we started, that talked about the idea of being concerned about each other, of being together in the things that we do, leads us to the song that Carl has selected for an invitation song, and that is one of the things that hopefully we can avoid as being part of the village. Asking God, and this is actually a prayer, to help us to be careful about what we say and how we say it. If you're here this morning, if you're not part of the village, if you're not a Christian, we would urge you, don't stand on the outside and look in. Be a part of the church. Be a part of living your life with all these things we've talked about this morning. And if you've done that and you've allowed yourself to drift away, we ask you to let us pray with you that you come back and get involved and become a part of the things that God has called us to do. If in any way you're subject to the invitation of Christ, we ask you to come and respond to God's invitation. As we stand and sing, won't you please come?